And tomorrow evening on Radio 4, we begin a new book at bedtime, Metamorphoses by Franz Kafka.
One morning, Gregor Zamsa awoke and was surprised to notice he had turned into a beetle. Oh, well, he thought it could be worse. If I'd been turned into a spider, I'd be really stuck. I've only got 3 pairs of shoes.
That's Metamorphoses by Franz Kafka, translated by someone who got a bit bored. But now it's time for the Anne Diamond radio show.
It's Anne Diamond.
Hello, I'm Anne Diamond. With us this morning on the Anne Diamond radio show, we have Bruce Cook. Now, Bruce has just written a rather special book. Bruce, what's the book about?
It's about my struggle against cancer.
It is a marvellous book, and I think that what makes your book particularly fascinating is that it's got a photo of Princess Di in it. Lovely photo. Can we all see that? Lovely dress. When was that photo taken?
Oh, she came to a charity event I organised.
So you met her then?
Yes.
What did she say to you?
Can't remember exactly. Something like, how do you do? Very pleased to meet you.
Was she smiling when she said it?
Yes.
Smiling radiantly?
Yes, I think so.
I bet she was. Isn't she lovely? Did she say anything else?
I don't think so.
And what sort of shoes was she wearing? Those blue ones the Emmanuel's designed for her.
I really can't remember.
Oh. Well, while Bruce remembers which shoes Princess Di was wearing, let's turn to our next guest, Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev. Mikhail, welcome.
Hi.
Now, you're over here to discuss many important issues, arms limitation,
yes.
Afghanistan, human
That's
rights,
right.
But I think the burning question we'd all like answered is, what do you think of Princess Di?
I think she's a great ambassador for Britain.
So do I. Mind you, not everybody thinks so.
No.
She gets a lot of criticism from some people. I don't think that's fair, do you?
Well, she can't answer back, can she?
Exactly. Now, as leader of a superpower, do you find the press really pry into your private life and won't leave you alone like they do with me?
Yes, sometimes it can be a real problem.
How do you deal with nosy parkers?
If necessary, we imprison them in Lubyanka.
Well, maybe we should have something like that here.
Yes.
Now, what about glasnost? Perhaps you could explain glasnost to us.
Oh, glasnost is policy of national self-criticism and openness.
And this glasnost, what does Princess Di think of it?
I'm not sure, but I should imagine she would be in favour of glasnost.
Well, it must be a good thing, then. Bruce, the proceeds from your book go to a charity, and I believe that Princess Di is its patron.
No. No, she isn't.
Why not? Didn't you ask her?
No.
Well, that's a funny way to run a charity, isn't it, Mikhail? Would you like to cuddle my baby?
Oh, yes, please.
Credit card accepted.
It's made a mark on my head.
Can I talk about my book now, please?
Yes, of course. We'd love to talk about your book, Bruce.
Thanks.
But I'm afraid we've run out of time. Just a few seconds left to thank Mikhail for being just lovely. And thanks to Bruce for coming along and telling us all how Princess Di gives him the will to live. This is Anne Diamond, cute and pert, with her head on one side, saying, I'm Anne Diamond and good night.
It's time for the Million Pound Radio Show, and here are your hosts, Andy Hamilton and Nick Revel.
Good evening. Later on in the show, the Ayatollah on how to market a bestseller.
Mm-hmm. And we'll be reviewing Norman Tebbit's biography called Upwardly Mobile and Cecil Parkinson's biography called Upwardly Penile. Shame it's not an Olympic sport, really, isn't
I went to the Olympics this year.
What, in Korea?
I went. Yeah, a friend of mine was in the British team.
Well, you never told me that.
Well, you know, I don't have to.
Well, I'd be telling everyone if I knew someone in the Olympic team. Unless they're a synchronised swimmer, of course. She was a synchronised swimmer, wasn't she?
It's all very well to mock, Andy, but synchronised swimming demands just as much hard work and self-discipline as any other sport.
Sport?
Sport. Mm. And then there's the terrible chronic injuries, you know. Carenza Shirell's seen surgeons all over the world, and none of them can help her. She's stuck with it for life.
With what?
The smile. She doesn't let it get her down, though. Nick, she says, we've all got our problems and you've just got to keep smiling.
She's got no choice, really, has she? Must have been great, though, being at the Olympics.
Yeah, oh, it was fascinating, you know. We were there for the opening ceremony, you know, where the runner carries the Olympic flame.
Oh, I saw that on TV with all the Korean students lighting their petrol bombs off it.
Absolutely, and the parties were amazing as well.
Parties?
Oh, yeah, a bit weird, though. I was in the middle of a waltz at this party with a Bulgarian shot putter, and she changed sex while I was dancing with her.
What happened?
Dunno, never saw her again. We both started leading and ended up at different corners of the room.
So in the synchronised swimming, how did Corenza Shirel get on?
She was very unlucky, actually, Andy. Mm. She was in the running for a medal in the solo section. And
solo synchronised swimming?
Yeah, it's a kind of zen thing. You have to imagine the other swimmer being there, you know.
And she didn't get a medal?
No, she got disqualified. Farting underwater. Bubbles, you know.
Yeah, lucky. So, Annie, were you romantically involved with Corenza Shirel?
Well,
so what's it like then, making love with a synchronised swimmer?
Well, pretty good, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Only trouble is when they turn over suddenly and stick one arm in the air.
Yeah. Yeah, I wondered why you were limping. Mm. Yeah.
The really hard bit is cartwheeling into the pool together when you start.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it would be, yes. Mm. Ladies and gentlemen, listeners, it's now time for another £1 million radio show exclusive. A tape leaked to us from an unknown source in Buckingham Palace.
So what do you think of the draft speech? I got so tired of making the same speech again and again, I thought I'd make this one a bit more challenging.
Yes, sir, it's an absorbing, well-argued speech. We've just got perhaps one or two tiny quibbles.
Mm-hmm. Just questions of terminology, mm-hmm. really.
Yes, in this paragraph here,
mm-hmm. yes.
The one about the CBI, we wonder whether the phrase business community might not be better than the expression capitalist scum.
I rather like that bit.
It does slightly on the inflammatory side.
Well, very well, but the rest is okay.
A magnificent, powerful and lucid. We did wonder, though, about the top of page 4.
Mm-hmm.
The paragraph which reads, the only way to overthrow the tyranny of the ruling classes is for the proletariat to seize the means of production.
What about it?
Well, the thing is, sir,
mm-hmm.
you haven't been by any chance reading books again, have you, sir?
How did you guess? Yes, I've been reading something by a chap called Marx. All seems to make perfect sense to me.
Hmm.
Basically, he's arguing for what's a sort of extension to my community award scheme, really.
Yes, the problem is, sir, that espousing Marxism might lay you open to the charges that you're getting involved in politics.
Not this old chestnut again. Any time I get to do anything interesting...
And we're not sure your mother would like it, sir.
Mother?
Her Majesty the Queen... Or, as you call her in this, that sordid, rotting carcass of a diseased tyranny.
I still love Mummy as a person. It's just, I feel as an institution she's corrupt. I was all in favour of the monarchy till Princess Michael came along. And this Marx chap, he just put it in a sort of nutshell for me.
We strongly advise you against making this speech.
Oh, drat and tosh.
And with respect, sir, when have we ever advised you badly? Didn't we advise you to marry Lady Diana Spencer rather than Gertie the barmaid you fancied at the Dog and Fox?
Yeah.
And didn't we advise you against shaving your head and joining the Orange People?
Oh, yes.
We've drafted a new speech for you, sir.
Oh, not this one again.
Would you like a practice, sir?
Must I? Oh, very well. It never ceases to amaze one what communities can achieve to help themselves.
Oh, excellent, sir.
Earlier this month, I visited a cooperative in Burnley. Oh, God, why me?
No, just stick to the speech as written, sir.
Lots of communities came for racial...
Another £1 million show exclusive there, sent to us anonymously with a note saying, thought you might be interested in this, Ying Tong Lai Po.
So we don't know who it's from. Nick, look at your trousers. They're covered in tar.
Yeah, I know. I got it round at my brother's the other day.
What, your brother Sybil?
Yeah.
Why was he christened Sybil?
The vicar had a cold. It should have been Cyril.
Oh.
Anyway, I had to go round last night to help him clean up, you see.
Mm, yeah.
All started on Monday morning. He had to go in to see his boss.
Come in. Rebel. Yeah. Take a seat. I just wanted to say how impressed I was by your performance at the Adventure Weekend. We took the entire department along to develop initiative and self-assertion, and you really threw yourself into it. Especially that war game. A lot of people might have felt a bit wary about ambushing the boss.
Yes, Mr. Jones.
And a lot of people might have felt a little uneasy about blindfolding him and then lashing him to a tree.
Mr. Jones.
Before pistol-whipping him until he fainted from pain.
Sorry, Mr. Jones.
Sorry, Mr. Jones. What happened to eat dirt, you mother?
I'm sorry, Mr. Jones. I got a bit carried away.
Indeed. Especially in the bit where everyone ran around with rifles firing paint at each other.
Shot lots of enemy.
Yes, except when we checked, they didn't have any paint on them, did they?
No, sir. I cheated.
Yes. I'd say using live bullets classified as cheating. How do you propose I restart this department, Rebel? You shot 9 people. 10 if you include the kid on the YTS scheme. By rights, we should hand you over to the police. But it wouldn't be very good for our corporate image having the head of public relations prosecuted for attempted mass murder.
Sorry, sir. But I got out of my suit, bandana around my head, and this primeval, ruthless predator in me came out and took over. I was possessed. I'm sorry, sir.
All right, Rebel. We'll say no more about it.
I'm sorry, sir. I'm sorry I pistol-whipped you. I stripped you naked. And I'm sorry I carved the word Pratt on your chest with my barrier.
It's healing nicely, thank you, Rebel.
Good, I'll get back to my desk then.
Oh, before you go, Rebel, you see this barrel of tar and these chicken feathers?
Yes, sir.
Oh, now you mean he tarred and feathered your brother?
Yeah, worst thing was he used live chickens.
So your brother's walking around naked, covered in tar with lots of live chickens stuck to him. That's terrible.
Well, not really. You never have to pay to get into the Hippodrome, and he ended up doing a 4-page fashion spread in the face.
Is he your only brother?
Yeah, I've got a sister as well.
What does she do?
Oh, she's a journalist. Mm. She's an Elvis Presley spotter for the Sunday Sports. What about you? You've got 3 brothers, haven't you?
Yeah, one's a pimp in Amsterdam.
Right.
One's in prison for mugging old ladies. And the third one's in advertising. But we don't talk about him.
No.
Actually, he came up with the advertising slogan for the government's employment training scheme. You know,
really?
The one. We'll train the workers without the jobs to do the jobs without the wages.
Wait a minute. No, that's not right, is it? Isn't it? We'll train the workers without the jobs to do the jobs without the workers.
Well, it is now. Yes, look, Lord Young tweaked it a bit, you know. He felt the truth was too brutal, apparently. And brutality takes us very nicely into our discussion spot. Tonight, we're looking at the complex and frightening issue of violence with a panel of experts. And if I may, I'd like to start with you, Dr. Desmond Morris. Now, Dr. Morris, a few years back you stunned the scientific world with your extraordinary theory that the kind of clothes people wear can actually indicate what sort of person they might be. So, what conclusions have you come to on the subject of violence?
Well, after years of painstaking study and research, I have come to the inescapable conclusion that violence is a form of aggression.
Really? While we all take in the enormity of Dr. Morris's revelations, let me turn to Professor Jane Hopton, author of The Violent Society. Now, Professor, is there any proof that violence can be caused by watching violence?
Well, there is irrefutable evidence that violent films can cause violent feelings. Mm. For instance, recently we monitored the audience leaving a Michael Winner film, and over 98% of them said they felt an urge to commit brutal acts of violence.
What, against strangers?
No, against Michael Winner.
So 98% want to attack Michael Winner. That's a rather alarming statistic, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It means 2% are abnormal.
Mm. And now I'd like to bring in our final expert on the complex moral issue of violence, Vinnie Jones of Wimbledon. Now, Vinnie, do you think violence is ever morally justified?
Who wants to know?
Well, I'm just interested in your views on the subject.
Well, the way I see it, in certain circumstances, violence is ethically justifiable, depending on the moral and social context, but mainly on whether he's in the penalty area or not.
Yes, absolutely. You see, certain forms of violence are legitimised and even encouraged by social forces and pressures that form a matrix of moral acceptability.
Who pushed his button?
I
think Vin is hit on an interesting area.
I'll hit you on an interesting area if you interrupt me again.
So basically, Vinny, you're saying violence is justified if it's a means to an end.
Right. I based my philosophy on Machiavelli.
Machiavelli.
Yeah. In fact, only last Saturday I was presented with a poignant moral dilemma against Liverpool. Peter Beardsley beats me. He's bearing down on our goal with just a goal at the beat. What do I do? I'm torn. So in the end, I decide I have to act effectively in line with the pragmatic teachings of Machiavelli.
So you tripped him?
No, I stabbed him. What are you staring at?
You. I'm just fascinated by your aggressive body language, the curling lip, the snarling teeth.
Yeah, I'd stop there if I was you, Dr. Morris.
Your posture and aggressive gestures are all fascinatingly reminiscent of a male baboon.
Yeah, I really would. I really would stop there if I was you. I really would.
Look, his face has turned purple. Classic biological signal. Oh, and there's another signal. Amazing. Oh, biting technique.
Well, while Vinny helps Dr. Morris with his research into animal violence. Just time to thank our experts and say that next week's discussion asks the question, is God dead? And if so, who got his record collection?
And now, continuing our series looking at the fascinating home lives of incredibly interesting people, this week we present At Home with Colin Moynihan, Minuscule for Sport. Minister for Sport.
Oh, 8:30. Colin should be home by now. Colin? Colin, is that you?
Ah, I can't get in! The cap flap's jammed!
And there we leave it, on the grounds that Colin Moynihan's height is the only interesting thing about him. Next week, At Home with Ayatollah Khomeini, who'll be giving us some advice on how to...
Yes. Yes, I think we'll just stop that item there. It's all the same to you. And incidentally, both Nick and I feel that the Ayatollah is a warm and wonderful human being with a fine grasp of literary criticism.
Absolutely. With us now, we have the junior minister responsible for food safety, Angela Truscott. Now, Angela, once and for all, what is the position on cheese?
Right. Let's be perfectly clear. Eating cheese is totally safe.
Great.
Provided you're not infirm.
Right.
Or old.
Ah.
Or young. Or pregnant. Or thinking of getting pregnant. And provided the cheese has been kept in the right conditions, then there's no reason at all why you shouldn't eat it.
I see. Well, that's very reassuring. What about eggs?
Perfectly safe, provided you boil them.
Right.
For 9 hours. In disinfectant. Inside a concrete saucepan.
And finally, what about chickens?
Chickens are 100% safe, provided it's thoroughly cooked. In an industrial furnace. And provided the army has evacuated all civilians from the area, and provided you've notified the UN. Then if you just keep to these simple steps, then chicken is perfectly safe to eat.
Good.
Probably.
So the government's saying there's absolutely nothing to worry about.
That's right.
Well, Angela, thank you very much.
Oh, that always worries me.
What?
Well, when the government says there's nothing to worry about, it always means there's something to worry about, doesn't
it? Yeah, I know. Well, if you're so worried, just avoid eating any foods that might be a bit dodgy. You know, like eggs, cheese, chicken, beef, milk, fish, pork, all pre-cooked food, vegetables, butter, margarine, veal, yogurt, shellfish, soufflés, lamb, omelettes, sugar and water.
So what does that leave?
Fags and bread, basically.
Yeah, but fags are unhealthy.
Yes, but at least with fags you know exactly how you're killing yourself, you see. It takes a lot of the stress out of it.
Yeah, I can see that. Mm. Nick, can I ask you something? Have you had many girlfriends?
Well, depends what you mean by many, doesn't it?
Well, can you remember them all?
Come on, Andy. I mean, can you count the stars in the sky? The fish in the sea? The Freemasons in the police force? Sorry if I sound... immodest.
Well, look, here's an easier question. Can you remember any girlfriends who wanted a second date?
Well, what do you mean, a second date?
Never mind.
Why do you want to know, anyway?
Well, it's just me and Libby were in bed the other night, and we got talking. How long have we been together now?
6 years this month.
Yeah. Did you have many boyfriends before me?
Oh, we've been through this before. I've told you. I've had 4 boyfriends. Gary Mackay when I was 17.
Mm.
Dennis Brown I was at college with. David Hughes and Simon Bentley. That was nothing serious. Simon was never serious about any one person. He always had lots of girlfriends.
No, no.
Hmm?
48, to be precise.
What? How do you know that?
Well, I rang him up and asked him.
Asked him?
You slept with him 6 years ago, love, so obviously it's in my interest to check it out, you know, medically speaking. You know.
Rang him up?
Yes.
How could you?
It was easy. I looked up all the Simon Bentleys in the phone book till I found him. 34 goes, but I mean...
Luke, how dare you! What did you do then? Ring up each of the girls he screwed and ask them who they'd slept with, eh?
Hey, come on. Don't get upset. I'm sorry. Hey, come on. Come on, of course I didn't ring them. I wrote to them. Ringing would have cost a fortune, love. I mean, we're talking about thousands of people here. See, indirectly, we've all slept with thousands of people, and any one of them.
Well, so, you'd better check out all my boyfriends, not just Simon. I mean, there was Gary McCullough.
Ah, yes, but that was 12 years ago, love. That's considered a safe time limit by the scientists, you see. Besides, you said he was a virgin when he met you.
Well, yes. But that's only what he told me.
No, it's what he told me. I checked him out just in case. In case the scientists are wrong about the time limit, of course.
Oh, I'm not getting involved in this. Go to sleep.
He sent his love, by the way. Gary Mackay. He owns his own garage now.
Oh, I can't believe you're so neurotic.
Oh, come on. Don't tell me you've never thought about it.
Of course I've thought about it, but I haven't got the range about it.
Well, haven't you ever worried about me? I mean, you know.
No.
No?
Because you told me you'd only had one previous lover in the last 7 years, which I can well believe.
That's right. Sarah Jones, her name was.
Well, then. So I saw no reason to start grilling people. I took the mature, sensible view, which was there was absolutely nothing to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
That it certainly wasn't worth getting riddled with panic and suspicion.
Yeah, you're right. Sorry, love. Yeah, Sarah Jones. Nice girl. Wonder where she is now.
Go to sleep.
Bit of a homebody she was. Sheltered upbringing. Can't imagine she'd had many previous lovers.
13.
Anyway, Nick, right, you never answered my question. How many girlfriends have you had?
Just look it up in the Guinness Book of Records, Andy. I expect you'll find me there.
What, under world's biggest prat?
How did you know?
I've got the latest edition of the Guinness Book of Records, actually. Got some very interesting statistics in it. World's largest insect, Colin Moynihan.
Yeah, I knew that.
Ah, you won't know this one. World's shortest joke.
No.
Colin Moynihan.
Ah. So is that the version, you know, compiled by Norris McWhirter?
Yeah, he's in it, actually.
Really?
Yeah, under world's most irritating right-wing git. And the Freedom Association is down under world's most inappropriately named organisation.
Ah. Well, I must have a look at that as soon as I finish reading what I'm on now.
What's that?
The Satanic Verses. It's the second edition, printed in asbestos.
Uh-huh. Since the dawn of time, mankind has attempted to understand his world by creating legends. These legends go to make up the marvel that is mythology. Wonderful myths abound in all human cultures. There are the gripping Scandinavian legends, which tell of Thor with his mighty hammer, Odin with his burning sword, and Sven with his yellow cagoule. There are the tales of the great Hindu deities, including Kali, the goddess with 12 arms, implacable in her fury and unbeatable at tennis. The great red Indian god Manitou, the Egyptian god Ra, and the god of the ancient Israelites, whose name was too awful to be spoken. So it was probably Jocelyn or something embarrassing like that. But perhaps the greatest source of myths was the culture of ancient Greece. And the most epic legend of Greece was the Siege of Troy, where King Agamemnon and his warriors consulted the oracle to learn their destiny.
Do we have to go through this mumbo jumbo?
Silence, Achilles! The oracle is about to speak!
But she's rubbish. She told us the Trojan War will be over by Christmas, whatever that is.
Quiet, noble Achilles!
Quiet, noble Achilles. The oracle is blessed with the sacred vision.
I see the future. For you, King Agamemnon, waste much pain.
And you, brave Ajax, you should be cruelly treated by the gods. But after your death, men shall remember you as a great warrior. And you, wise Odysseus, after you should be named a heroic and wondrous journey that will lift men's hearts. And you, mighty Achilles, bravest of all, after you shall be named a small tendon in the back of the heel.
Oh, brilliant. Thanks a bunch. I can't wait. She's rubbish, I told you.
Wait, there is more. Corinth versus Athens, home win.
The Oracle's predictions came true. Odysseus was to become the hero of another famous story, the Fantastic Odyssey. Though interestingly, historians have now proved that the Odyssey was conceived not as an epic legend, but as an attempt by Odysseus to justify his travel expenses. The power of Greek mythology is astonishing, with its monsters like the Minotaur, half man, half bull, half innumerate, and Medusa, whose face could turn men to stone, which made steady relationships very difficult. In all cultures, men have seen their lives as being held in the balance by immortals. In the jungles of Mexico, the Aztecs used to sacrifice human beings to their sun god. Almighty sun god, once again, we your servants meet to sacrifice to you, so you will bless our crops with your warming, life-giving rays.
This pleases me, your sun god.
Mighty sun god, did you get that virgin we sent you last week?
Last week? I'm not sure.
The one festooned with gold and diamonds. We threw her down the sacred well last Tuesday.
Oh, right. I expect she's in the internal post.
Only, we're a bit worried. You see, the harvest is late, and last spring, if you remember, mighty sun god, we sacrificed 12 virgins to you, and, well, it wasn't much of a harvest, was it?
Wasn't bad.
Yes, but it wasn't 12 virgins worth, was it? I mean, let's be honest, you know. So this time around, what we're proposing is you give us the harvest, then we'll send you the virgins. Okay, how's that? Virgins on delivery. I mean, fair's fair, isn't it?
You dare to defy your sun god?
I'm sorry, we are not prepared to throw away good virgins after bad. I mean, we haven't got an endless supply of untainted maidens, you know. It's getting hard to find them. Girls aren't so keen on hanging on to their virginity if they know it means they'll end up being chucked down a well. They're not stupid.
Sacrifice 12 virgins to me now, or you will feel my omnipotent power.
Your omnipotent power? As a sun god. Of the people who've just had the 3 wettest summers since records began. And you're demanding the lives of 12 virgins.
Oh, very well. I'll take 2 virgins now and the rest on account.
Done. Every human culture has a wealth of legends, except for that of Belgium, whose most exciting legend concerns the day that someone's hat blew off in Antwerp. But the human spirit can never escape the seductive power of great myths. Did you know that even to this day, there are still people in England who think that they once had a Labour government? Although this legend is beginning to fade, but there will be others to perpetuate the marvel that is mythology.
That's it for this week. Next week, President Bush will be revealing why he chose Dan Quayle as vice president. George did it to ensure that no one would ever dare assassinate him.
And also next week, leader of Westminster Council, Lady Porter, on why we shouldn't speak ill of the dead, but it's okay to build on them.
The £1 Million Radio Show was written and presented by Andy Hamilton and Nick Revel and featured Felicity Montague and Jasper Jacobs. It was produced by Paul Mayhew Archer.